Remember the Cold War? Now, whatever people's views of the East-West rivalry, one thing was clear. There was a vibrant debate in the US and the West generally about relations with the Kremlin. Hawks, doves, cold warriors, realists, confrontation, détente. Well, that debate no longer exists, according to my next guest. Why? Well, for most politicians and pundits, it's because Putin is a brutal autocrat and an expansionist on the march. Hillary Clinton's even called Putin the new Hitler. Or are Putin and Russia misunderstood? Now, as it happens, it's Donald Trump, of all people, who wants to start a political debate about ending that new Cold War. And for this, his critics are attacking him as some kind of Russian agent. What's going on here? Well, to unpack all this, let's hear from Stephen Cohen. He's Professor Emeritus of Russian History at Princeton and New York University, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him back to Between the Lines. Hi there, Steve.
Tom, I'm glad to be back, but if I was on American radio and you had asked me what's going on here, I might say it beats me in hang up. Because well, I'll tell you true, I entered the field of public discourse about Russia in the 1970s, and it was exactly as you just described it. We won some and we lost some, but we had a debate among those people who wanted more Cold War and more nuclear weapons, and those of us who wanted what we called détente, which meant then that you substitute cooperation for conflict and try to reduce the Cold War. We had a full-throated debate. We have not had any in this country in the mainstream media. There are alternative publications like where I publish, The Nation magazine and others. But in the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, and all the TV networks, including our PBS, this point of view, the détente point of view, has been excluded. Now, it was bad enough until a month ago when suddenly Trump, who in his odd way, I'm not a Trump supporter, but I'm interested in what he's got to say about Russia, begins to sound like he wants détente with Russia.
Yes.
So now we got a situation that if you say Trump said something interesting about Russia, before you get it out of your mouth, you're now denounced not only for being an apologist of Putin, but an apologist for Trump.
But to be fair though, Steve, I mean, your critics might say, well, this is because of Putin's behavior, that his incursion in Crimea in March 2014, Russia's meddling in eastern Ukraine since, that's justified a widespread policy consensus in Washington and Brussels, hence the hostile response. How would you respond to that?
Well, you're right about that counter-argument. Let me give you a little historical context. The new Cold War, and I published a book about this 5-6 years ago called Soviet Fates and Lost Alternatives, I argue that we were in a Cold War with Russia under the Bush administration. Has everybody forgotten the proxy Georgian War in 2008? There was a ferocious demonization of Putin that began in about 2003 or 4, after a honeymoon with Putin. And it built. And everything bad that happened was basically blame Putin. Then comes the Ukrainian crisis. Now, if you look at that moment, as historians will down the road, they will ask who provoked whom, who was aggressive. One side will take the position you just stated, that Putin did something unforgivable. He aggressed against Ukraine. The other side will say, wait a minute, it was the United States in late 2013 that made an effort to bring Ukraine into NATO, between the lines, in this so-called economic partnership deal. Everybody said it was just to join the European economy, but at the end there was a section called military security issues, which required Ukraine, if it had signed it, to abide by all NATO policy. So Russia now is faced with a dilemma. If NATO occupied Ukraine, it then occupied Crimea, 85% ethnic Russian, 300 years part of Russia, plus the site of Russia's major deep water, warm water naval
base.
So Putin was given this information, and as a former intelligence officer, he could evaluate it. He had to make a decision, and we know there was a debate. And his judgment was there was a real danger to Crimea, and he had to. He says he reunited it with it. They had a referendum. We say he snatched it. So there's two sides to each of these stories. And here's the point, Tom. I'm prepared to let folks here make up their own mind which side of the story is more plausible. We just can't get, and it's not just me, there's a group of us and people more eminent than me. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jack Matlock, Reagan's ambassador to Russia, former senator and presidential candidate Bill Bradley, the legendary basketball player.
New Jersey.
I could name you another 10 guys and women.
And distinguished intellectuals like John Mearsheimer and Stephen Walt, who've been guests on the show. Yeah.
The point here is not who's right and wrong, but we can't get the other side of the story out.
Well, worse than that, so, Stephen, I mean, the charges persist, and they're mainly coming from the left side of politics, that Trump is some kind of agent of Putin's. I mean, this is how the New York Times columnist Paul Krugman describes Putin. He says he's the Siberian candidate. What's going on here?
Well, Krugman, who's a Nobel Prize winner, a former Princeton professor, as am I, really sunk into the swamp with the next sentence he wrote, which was, I think I can quote him correctly, "In office, Trump would follow Putin's policies, which would be detrimental to America's allies and to America itself." Mm. Now, for people of my generation who entered the field at the tail end of McCarthyism, this is neo-McCarthyism. And we got another issue here in America. I don't know what it's like in Australia. But what was a non-debate has now become a toxic neo-McCarthyite attack on Trump because of what he said about Putin. And it is coming from the Clinton administration. And they really need to stop, because when this election is over, that toxicity will still be in our public discourse. And as somebody said to me the other day, if they can basically red bait, Putin bait, Kremlin bait American presidential candidate, who will they come after next?
Well, a few weeks ago, WikiLeaks revealed that the DNC, this is the Democratic National Committee, that they tried to deny Bernie Sanders the nomination in the Democratic primaries. Now, in response, the Clinton campaign, many liberal journalists suggested that the Russians were behind the hacking in an effort to help Trump. I mean, how would you respond to the argument that the Kremlin is interfering in America's internal affairs?
I would respond with my axiom, about which I do not know, I do not speak. I know nothing about hacking. The allegations that the Russians did it has been challenged. James Clapper, who's head of American National Intelligence, said they did not know who did it. They don't know. So let's assume nobody knows. In Moscow, as you and I talk, Tom, there's a debate about Trump, public debate. And the public debate reflects Kremlin or high-level elite opinion. And the debate goes as follows. Some people think a Trump presidency would be great for Russia, but not because he would be their agent, but because he's taken positions that are similar to the Kremlin's position. But there's another side, and I would say it's the stronger side, that says essentially that Trump is such a wacko that he'd represent instability. And the one thing the Kremlin wants is stability and predictability. They're not looking for excitement.
No.
They're looking for predictability. So again, you see, there's two sides to each story.
That's right.
But even that story, that there's a debate in the Kremlin about whether Trump would be good or bad for Russia, is not presented here, because we can't get on the air.
My guest is Professor Stephen Cohen. He's one of the world's leading experts on Russian history, and we're chatting about Trump, Putin, and ending the new Cold War. Steve, what about NATO? I mean, is Trump, and he's copped a lot of criticism for saying this, but is he right to say that NATO is a relic of the Cold War, that member states should stop being freeloaders of American taxpayers and the American security umbrella, and that NATO expansion, moreover, has needlessly provoked the bear?
Well, this is how I got dragged into the controversy over Trump. When he first said that, and he said something somewhat differently, I went on the air and I said, Trump is asking a question that 1,000 policy wonks in Washington have been asking for 25 years since the end of the Soviet Union. What exactly is the mission of NATO? Or is NATO an organization in search of a mission? And I then replied, its mission for 20 years has been to expand to Russia's borders. But people are asking now why they're not fighting the Islamic State or fighting terrorism. So a couple of weeks ago, NATO set up a little shop called Fighting Terrorism. They were sensitive to this charge. All that I think that Trump has asked, and he doesn't ask things or say things very well, that they aren't paying their dues according to the charter. Obama has been saying this for 7 years. They're supposed to pay 2%. Only five countries do. The United States pays
five countries out of 28 member states. Let's remember one of them is America.
I don't know where Australia is right now, but and I'm not pointing any fingers. But we over here in the colonies 1.5. Are paying 75%. Mm. So Trump, you know, who does everything according to a ledger, what it costs businessmen, says they're not paying what they're supposed to pay. But the more important question Trump asked is, what is the mission of NATO? Now, that's not a Trump question. That's a D.C. wonk question for years. And it's become critical because do we really want NATO doing major military operations from the Baltic to the Black Sea on Russia's borders? I do not, because nuclear missiles have been deployed. We're approaching a Cuban Missile Crisis situation. Why shouldn't we debate that in Australia and in the United States?
Well, that's a very good point. I was in Washington in the mid to late 1990s, Steve, and I remember a great debate about the future of NATO. And your old colleague, George Kennan, was among others who were saying that the decision to expand NATO east onto Russia's frontiers was fraught with danger. But we don't have that debate now. If anyone like George Kennan made that argument today in Washington, they'd probably be denounced as some kind of Russian agent.
I mean, how come you're in Australia and get it, and people sitting here in New York don't get it?
Well, believe me, I'm a minority voice on this issue. But look,
all right. Well, wait a minute. You mentioned George. I was at Princeton for 30 years, where George lived.
Right. Now, we should stress for everyone, George Kennan was the intellectual architect of the containment doctrine in the mid to late 1940s.
And more than that, considered later America's best thinker about American-Russian relations. Mm-hmm. Presidents consulted with him. He was kind of a Henry Kissinger without the baggage. He was an enormously revered and respected man. Somebody said to me just what you said the other day. Well, let me back up. In the 90s, George said something utterly prophetic, that if you expand NATO, it will lead to a new Cold War. Mm-hmm, that has happened. By the way, it didn't go unopposed. Something like 88 former American ambassadors, including Reagan's ambassador to Moscow, Jack Matlock, signed a petition against it.
And Paul Nitzer as well.
All right, but you asked the kind of unanswerable question, but as a kind of counterfactual question, it's a good one. If George Kennan were alive today, would he be denounced as an apologist of Putin? Mm. That's the question, you see. Mm-hmm. That's what the rest of us are being called. So I don't know. Something bad has happened in the United States. The New York Times on Sunday, or in recent days, had an op-ed by some guy who used to be the acting director of the CIA. His reputation is shattered because he was wrong about the Iraq War. Who prints an article saying that the Russians have turned Trump into an agent. I mean, when a former CIA director, acting director, says that, you know that something's gone wrong.
And Trump, unlike Clinton, may be in sync with public opinion. Now, I've just got some Pew Research Center polls here that show that although Putin is unpopular, Americans don't feel threatened by Russia. They're more worried about Islamic terror and job losses due to free trade and immigration.
I don't know the situation in Australia, but I can tell you that in the United States, this new Cold War is an elite project. It has nothing to do with the American people. All the American people want to do is fix this country and not have any more wars.
That's right.
That's what you get in the polls. There's no evidence that a majority of the American people are hawkish toward Russia. Yeah. There really is. But the elite, which controls the media, I mean, they scare me to death. Every day they're talking
Well, Steve, we can talk forever about this. It's a pleasure again to have you on the program. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom. Be well.
Via Skype, that was Stephen Cohen, Professor Emeritus of Russian History from Princeton and New York University.